Sun rises and your heart beats, Spirit is at hand. People think that Spirit can only be known through fairy tale stories of old men in the mountains or obscure poetry about gods riding dragons. Others declare that elaborate ritual, frightening talisman, and mumblings from the depths of spirit possession are necessary for understanding. This is simply not true. Why put another's experience before your own? Spirit is in each of us. Admittedly, an individual's common ignorance usually obscures awareness of spirit. But this does not mean that there is no spirit or that it is not important. Spirit is there for us to experience any time that we can open ourselves to it. Is the sun shining? Does night follow day? Is the sky blue? Do you have feeling? Then it is possible to know Spirit directly and immediately. Don't delay. Don't think yourself too insignificant. Feel for it, right now. As long as you are alive, Spirit is right at hand. So we have already covered the resentment inventory. We spent a lot of time talking about fear and the fear inventory. And then there's the third inventory, which is a conduct inventory. Usually it's referred to as the sex conduct inventory or sex inventory, and it focuses on our conduct in relation to others, usually the opposite sex when you go through it the first time, or the same sex if that is your preference. But it's about, there's nine questions that are simply covered on page 69. And those nine questions you can take through and answer. They're pretty simple, you know. Where we've been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate. Who did we hurt? The world, by the way. Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? Okay. The what should we have done instead in the conduct in the relationships gives us an idea of how we should actually be living in the conduct in our other relationships. So what should we have done instead? Essentially, it's directly opposite of everything that you've ever done. And then that should be the guide for the way that you proceed. So for me, the first time that I wrote inventory, the resentment inventory was profound from the standpoint of I thought I was pretty okay with the world. And then I had 127 names on my resentment list, and I realized that perhaps I wasn't so good with the world. I was new in sobriety, so fear didn't exist, so there was really nothing there. But then we got to this conduct inventory, and I started looking at the relationships in my life that I had with the opposite sex. And it was very profound to me, because what it made me realize is that I had certain beliefs about the way that I was that created this dynamic with the opposite sex. And what was strange is the way that I showed up with the opposite sex, this demand to be right, this demand for respect, this struggle for power, to have more, all these things. When I compared that back to my resentments, it showed up in every area of my life. The way that I showed up with the opposite sex is the way that I showed up at work, that I showed up with friends, showed up in all these things. So it was incredibly profound. But since the initial inventory, there haven't been a lot of, there's just not a lot of sexual struggles for me anymore. So it's more about the conduct and the way that I show up in other relationships. Again, the questions are pretty simple. We don't need to spend a bunch of time in it. But what I would like to spend a couple minutes talking about is possibly my favorite paragraph in the book. Most of the people that have interactions with me have heard me driving down the road reciting this paragraph to them. And it usually has to do when they're showing up in a way that is not consistent with the ideal that they set for themselves and how they want to show up in their life. Okay, so when I take a guy through inventory, I have him write several ideals about how to show up at the end of inventory. I want him to write a relationship ideal, how he wants to show up in in a relationship with the opposite sex. I have him write an ideal of how he wants to show, if he's a father, how do you want to show up as a father? How do you want to show up at work? How do you want to show up in recovery? If he's got a lot of struggles with his parents, how do you want to show up as a son? I have him write these ideals, okay? Because here's the crazy thing is after you go through this inventory, you've done a fifth step, you've got this list of defects that you're reviewing in 6 and 7, at that point in time, unless you've done something gravely wrong and you got a really shitty sponsor, you know how you should be living life the rest of your life. Okay? This first full paragraph on page 70 is so powerful to me, and it doesn't just apply to the sex ideal, it applies to the way that we live our lives. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Whatever the ideal is, that you, how you want to show up in your life. Does this mean that we're going to get drunk or high? Some people tell us so. But this is only a half-truth. It depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have an honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we will have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to get drunk or high. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. If you've gone through inventory and you know that you're supposed to be a faithful husband and you continue to go out and cheat on your wife, this paragraph right here is a warning. You know that you're not supposed to be doing it. If you've done it and you're sorry and you take it to God to try to help God, have God help you with it, you're probably going to be okay. But if you keep repeating it over and over again, we might see you in here next year. Because that's how this shit works, guys. You can trick yourself and think that it's not bothering you, but if you've gone through the inventory process and you know the difference between right and wrong in your soul, I'm not talking about what Brandon and Tarek say is right and wrong, what you believe and have accepted to be true, and you continue to act contrary to that belief, you're going to get fucked up. Guaranteed, 100% of the time. So, read this paragraph. Work with this paragraph. Establish an ideal. And know that if you fall short, because we all fall short, guys. But here's the deal. If I'm striving for perfection, and I fall a little bit short, I'm probably going to be okay. If I'm striving for okay, and I fall short, I'm probably drunk. Just the way I look at it.
Thanks, Brandon. All right. I love what it says on 71 after completing this inventory process. It says, we have now swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about ourselves. And I heard Katie one time say, chunks of glass is more like it. Because there's a lot of what we discover, we don't quote unquote like. But again, as I said earlier, it is part of, like, the inventory process for a while was about finding out who I'm not, but now it's a combination of finding out who I'm not and who I am. Right? There's only been one version of this human being called Tarek in the history of existence. No other collection of atoms has been put together in this unique version. So in that way, I am terminally unique. I get how they say we're not terminally unique in terms of our common problems and common solutions. But this is an expression of existence that's never occurred in the history of the cosmos. And therefore, it's an expression of God because I'm contingent. Like, what's anchoring me in existence is I believe this power called God. And therefore, the better I know myself, the better I know this version of God. That's all I'm trying to say. And so, I'm not always going to like what I find, but I'm very accepting of what I find now. Struggles and limitations and things I've overcome. It's a whole package. And this all started with my first fifth step. Started this journey of now where my life is dominated. I forget I was talking to somebody this week. it's all running now. The sessions are running together. But we were talking outside either today or yesterday about the increase in the importance of accountability and intimate disclosure to people that are traveling the same path, headed in the same direction. You got a question?
Oh,
no, no. And so the longer I stay clean and sober, the longer I stay on this spiritual path, the more important that becomes, is having those individuals around me. I mean, it's just as important, if not more important, I think, than sponsoring people sometimes. I mean, I love sponsoring people, but I don't think that's ever going to go away. And the prayer and meditations are important, and admitting when I'm wrong and making amends promptly, all of that stuff is important. Practicing awareness is important. But this idea of having a group of people around you that know what you're struggling with on a regular basis, it's becoming more and more important as each year goes by for some reason. And it started with my first fifth step, because my first fifth step was the first time at age 31 that I'd been entirely honest with another human being. And it had a profound effect on me. Right? I mean, I spent a lot of time in trap houses and crack houses, trap motels, abandoned houses. I did a lot of things that no man wants to sit up here and admit that he did. I was out on the block. I was out in the streets. And therefore, there was a lot of stuff that occurred that, you know, I carried a great deal of guilt, which I thought it was wrong. But then I thought there was something wrong about me, which meant the shame was also setting in. And this is just my experience. I'm very grateful that the man that listened to my first fifth step was also a meth addict and a crackhead. Because as I'm sharing all this deviant sexual behavior and all these things that I swore I was going to take to the grave, and prostitutes were like a big part of my experience. And so that took me to all kinds of weird and crazy places. And I was so terrified that the man listening to my fifth step was going to have some type of judgment against it. I remember I had a 1-inch binder that was literally 1 inch thick, because he made me write out every resentment. So I had like 16 or 17 towards my dad. So my dad had 16 or 17 pages. Resentment 1, resentment 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, 1E. And so he made me come to, I went to his house every Sunday. He would only listen to me for 3 hours. And when I asked him one time, why am I only allowed to read for 3 hours? He goes, I'm not exposing myself to your toxic poison for more than 3 hours at a time. That's what he told me. He goes, I'm just not going to do it. And so it took, I can't remember, but it was over five, it was five or more Sundays. I think it was like 6 or 7 Sundays. So an 18-hour fifth step. And I had to read every single one. But all the sexual, all the stuff that had to do with sex was like 3/4 of the way, right, is where it started. And so like those first 4 or 5 Sundays, I'm like wondering if I'm going to have the courage to read it when I get to it. Because all I can really do, because I'm sitting on this sofa on the far end, and he's in this little chair with an ottoman on the other side of the room. So I could easily pick up 4 or 5 pages at a time and turn it. Right? And he would not be the wiser. But when it came to that day and I started sharing all that stuff, I remember he just listened, and then he just opened up, and it was like he was doing a fist step. He unloaded his fist step on me, and he had done everything I had done. And he had no judgment. And I could sense that he loved me, and for some reason that was, I think, the catalyst in having such a profound experience in the fifth step. So one of the things I want to talk about is not only like reading your inventory, which is you taking your fifth step. We have responsibilities when we listen to fifth steps, right? Because if you fast forward, the first man I ever took through all 12 steps, John. John's a common name, so I'm not breaking his anonymity. You'll never know who he is. I remember we were listening to the first one. I was listening to my first fifth step, and he had some stuff on there that was sexual in nature. And he told me, and I had it as well, and he started crying. And when I started to share with him, and he told me a story that I have carried with me, and I'm fascinated, it was my very first one. He said, because this guy had had 5 years multiple times and relapsed. And he was, you know, I think at the time he was, I think, like 10 years older than me. And a man had listened to him share that part of his inventory and got up in the middle of the fifth step and said, "I cannot sponsor you anymore." So this guy, since that last experience with the fifth step, had been terrified to do a fifth step. And so it's a sacred thing. It can be a very pathetic thing too sometimes. And you those of you in here that have listened to a lot of fifth steps, you'll understand what I mean, because some of them are like, it's, I mean, if you want to talk about getting your, putting gloves on, getting your hands dirty with, and some individuals just cannot look at things from an entirely different angle, so they tend to be very difficult to listen to their fifth steps. Regardless of it being pathetic or not pathetic, they don't ever know that I really think that, not in the process. And it is sacred, and I don't violate that confidence. But for me, it says here on page 72, "We made our personal inventory. What shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path." The obstacles in my path was I'd never been transparent or honest with another human being. They knew everything that I had been through, all the events that molded me into the human I was at the age of 31. And this idea of a new attitude and a new relationship towards our Creator. You know, like I said in the beginning, I was more attracted to that personal relation, that personality change or the psychic change. But there was something that happened here, because I can sit here 12 years and 2 months removed. I still remember what it was like when I left his base. We were in his basement. Left his house and walked to my car that I parked out on the street. When they say the weight of the world has been lifted, I've never really been able to do anything with that phrase other than say, yeah, it makes intellectual sense. But I am telling you, my step was a little bit lighter, right? The sun was a little bit crispier. The air was just a little bit freer. I don't know what was going on, but I felt a significant difference walking from his house to my car after completing that fifth step, because I knew there was at least one other human being on this planet that knew everything about me that I had nothing to hide from. And so as the years have evolved, I've discovered, it might be of great benefit to have more than one person that knows all that stuff, right? And so throughout the years, I've done multiple fifth steps whenever I go through the work. I've read to like four people at the same time, gotten four different feedbacks at the same time. I've read the females, all of which is because they can look into my experience and see things that I can't see or the other people couldn't see. So I just get a clearer picture of who I am and who I'm not. And so I feel like sometimes my life has become an endless series of like step 5 and step 10. Over and over and over. Intimate disclosure. And through the intimate self-disclosure, we heal. We integrate. When I say integrate, I mean we take those parts of ourselves that we stuff in the shadow, as Carl Jung calls it, the parts about ourselves that we do not want to acknowledge. But you know the old saying, you spot it, you got it, right? That's where that stuff comes from. We hide it in the shadows. We don't acknowledge its presence. But then we project it onto other people. We identify it in other people. And a lot of times it's unconscious, and then sometimes it's conscious. But when we're able to continuously share that part of ourselves with others, and this is what happens in the fifth step, and they reciprocate and they share theirs, it reframes like what the event is. And this is how the psychic change begins to take place, how we move from the victim to freedom, and we lose our egoism and we lose our fear. Right? This is part of integrating, becoming a more complete human being in a lot of ways. And the fifth step's not something I enjoy. When I listen to a fifth step, There is a great deal of preparation in terms of psychological for me, because it is a sacrifice for me to sit there for 3 hours and listen. It just is, because I don't know. I see the sacredness of the fifth steps, but they've become over the years more and more difficult. You know, my knowing of how important it is in someone else's waking up experience is why I still do it. But I swear to God, sometimes if I could outsource the fifth step, I would. I'm just telling you the truth. I mean, but I still do it because it's a responsibility that I have, right? And so in our book, it says that the best reason first, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking and using. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience. They have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk or high. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought that they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense that we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. So, you know, when, as you share resentments, fear, and conduct, you're telling your story. How do I say this? Later on, when we get to the instructions of the fifth step, it says, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating to shine light in every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, conditional. This is a conditional statement. Once we've taken this step withholding nothing, we are delighted. This means we're not going to be delighted until we've disclosed everything. And so my way around this, I just did this a couple weeks ago. I was listening to a fifth step. And as I listen to a fifth step, I make a list of the grosser handicaps and patterns that I'm identifying. And then I'm keeping an eighth step list. Now, I'm not a sponsor that edits the sponsee's eighth step list. I will never. You need to take this into prayer and meditation. Right? And I would suggest. I suggest you consider making this amends, but it's up to you whether or not you're going to make it. And so, it's funny, because as I'm writing the eight-step list, all I'm really doing is taking every single person from his resentment inventory and putting it on his eight-step list. They don't know I'm doing that, but that's what I'm doing. Because you probably owe an amends to every single person in your resentment inventory. I'm telling you, that's how I ended up with so many amends. The first time I made my list, I think I had somewhere between 150 and 160 amends. By the time I was like 3.5, 4 years sober, that list had grown to 230. Because I would sit in meetings, I'd hear stories and be like, it would remind me of someone I did something to someone I completely had forgotten about until I heard one of you share about it. And I said to myself, fuck, damn it. I got to add that one to my ace though. And so I made his list, and he's like, I owe everyone an amends. I was like, man, your fourth columns indicated to me that this person belonged in your eighth step list. And he understood that. When we ended his fifth step, I said, I gotta ask you some questions. And here we go. All right. Have you ever been involved in abortion? Have you ever had a homosexual experience? Have you ever been involved in rape? Have you been involved in a homicide or covering one up? Have you been involved in armed burglary? Have you had sex with an animal? And have you had sex with any family members? And have you been molested or molested? And we had a discussion. And I can tell you, in almost every experience of asking those questions, we end up with a long conversation of stuff that did not show up on the resentment inventory, the fear inventory, or the conduct inventory. Why do I do that? Because of what the book just said. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is they never completed their house cleaning. Right? Again, there are certain things you're going to hear in fifth steps that, you know, sometimes I have had to seek guidance from an attorney before, if that tells you anything. If you hang out long enough here and you hear things in a fifth step, you may want to consult with an attorney. right? This is what sponsors are for. This is what grand sponsors are for. This is what great-grand sponsors are for. Because if you have the family tree, you're going to have someone. Like for me, when I hit the situation, I called Mr. Chris, our buddy, who's been sober for a long time. He didn't know what to do with me, but he sent me to Gary, who's been sober 50 years. And you best, like, along 50 years, you sort of run across everything almost. And so he gave me some really good guidance on what to do in this specific situation. So, with all that being said, the fifth step has some of the greatest promises of any of the promises in our book.
Wait, I thought there were just the AA promises. What?
Oh, no.
There's more?
Yeah, there are promises throughout the whole book.
Huh.
Those are nine-step promises that you guys read all the time. There are other promises, and there is one more part of the fifth step that I'm going to go to before Brandon covers six and seven. We pocket our pride, go to it, shining light into every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past, which I just discussed. And once I've taken this step, withholding nothing, I am delighted. This is what I experienced walking from my sponsor's house to my car. I could look the world in the eye, you best believe it. I knew I could be alone in perfect peace and ease. My fears began to fall from me. I began to feel the nearness of spiritual condition. Like I just felt like I was waking up spiritually. I don't know if I walked away from the car that day feeling the nearness of my Creator. We had many spiritual beliefs, but now I began to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the crack problem had disappeared came strongly. I knew it had been gone for some time. And I felt like I was on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. I think that's a checklist. I think those things need to occur. I don't know how to what degree each one has to occur to, but they're part of our fifth step. And I think for some people they're greater. They're felt to a greater degree. But I think on some level they have to always be felt. And so then I returned home and I found a place where I could be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what I had done. 1 year I went through the steps, and the guy that took me through the steps, he goes, I don't want you to do anything for your hour returning home except sit alone in perfect peace and ease. He said, don't meditate, don't pray. I just want you to sit for 1 hour in perfect peace and ease, and let's see if you can do it. It was an interesting experience. I enjoyed it very much. You can have fun with this stuff. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. And my way of looking at things is because I know myself better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. I go over the first five proposals and I ask myself, is my work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? The second step, the third step, the fourth step. Have I skimped on the cement into the foundation? Do I participate equally in the fellowship and the program? Let's take a look at that. How am I doing up to this point? That's we didn't cover this weekend, but on page 17 they talk about the common problem and the common solution, and they warn you about the fellowship not being enough by itself to keep you clean and sober for good. It's like a warm bath that does not last for long. That's if you're a real alcoholic or real addict, that's what happens when the fellowship is your primary tool for staying clean and sober. But they tell us that you're going to pour cement into the foundation being the willingness you have from your first step. Remember, and I'm about to use profanity because I don't have any other word in the English language to get my message across, when you see how fucked you are in the first step,
doomed
in the first step, you'll become willing to do whatever you have to do to undoom yourself in steps 2 through 12. And so that foundation that comes from the willingness that you see out of the first step based on how clear it is to how screwed you are, that launches you into this second phase of construction in this arch that we're going to walk through to new freedom, which is the cement. And the cement is unity, which is in the fellowship, and the program and the recovery. I've been guilty of sponsoring a bunch of people, doing my prayer and meditation, but I go to very few meetings. right? And it's changed. I think it's about to change again because I'm moving. So new city, I'm going to go find out what some meetings are like. And so that's going to be a good thing. But I've always had a home group. I've always had service commitments. Not always. The majority of my time here, I've had service commitments at every group I've been involved in. So we can talk about that more in depth after this session if you would like. And so returning home, I am old school. Like the sponsee from 2 weeks ago, I said, hey, when you get home, find a shelf. Put the book up on the shelf. Take it down. Turn to this page. That's exactly what I want you to do. That's what was done with me, so that's what I do with the guys I sponsor. I guess we're old-fashioned in that way. And we did the hour returning home. In their returning home, they were to look at the first five steps, but I also wanted them to write out their sane and sound sex ideal for their future relationships. That was part of their returning home. And this last time, I had the guy go ahead and do 6 and 7 on the end of his returning home. I haven't done that in a couple... I mean, it's been a while, because most guys, I have them... write their grocery handicaps on a note card, and the next time they are confronted with their behavior and it acting out and underneath one of their defects, I have them do their prayer then, because there's a sincerity of like needing God, because you're acting out in a defect that you don't want to act out in anymore, and so there it creates more of an experience with asking God for help, and there's a new degree of humility, which is what the whole 7 steps about. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. That's what I wanted to cover on the fifth step. So listening to the fifth step, I keep the list of grosser handicaps, I keep the 8-step list, and I'm continuously asking them, do you see how this trouble is of your own making? Do you see how this trouble is of your own making? Right? And the conversations start with that question, and there's a lot of conversations taking place, which is why the fifth step process can take so long. But I think that's all I got on that.
So, I don't know how many fifth steps I've actually listened to, but in listening to them, the thing that I can assure you guys is that there's nothing new. Nothing that you've done hasn't been done. The only thing that has only showed up in one fifth step that was a little bit kind of like different from anything else that I've ever heard was there was a guy that had a resentment against his dad because his dad and his uncle, when he was 8 years old, plotted to kill his mom in front of him. Okay, that's the only one that really stands out as kind of something different. But, you know, dudes doing stuff with animals and people that they don't want to do stuff with and doing shady shit all over the place. Like, everybody's got it. You sponsor enough guys, you listen to enough fifth steps, there's nothing new. There's nothing new. Your deepest, darkest thing that you're most terrified of, I can almost guarantee it. If you're reading it to me, I got it too. And anybody else you read it to, they got it too, if they're being honest about it. Okay? There's certain fundamental things that most men have. This idea of not good enough. You know, good God, that exists, right? Like, everybody's got it. Newsflash. You know, we don't live up to the ideal that we set and what we think we should be in our own mind, where we've overinflated who we are and nobody appreciates us. Okay? Every single dude in this room's got that shit going on. You can pretend you don't, but you do. Right? Then the other thing in the fifth step that I just... there's a misprint in the book on page 73. I'm going to draw it to your attention. It says, more than most people, the alcoholic and addict lead a double life. Double is wrong. It's absolutely wrong. I had one personality that I used at work. I had one personality with my parents. I had one with my wife. I had one with my friends. I had one with the girls at the club. I had one with the kids. Like, the most terrifying thing in my life is if all those people got together and discovered that I was a different person for every single one of them. So That would have to be quintuple or sextuple or, like, it's not a double life. Like, my life was so, it was so hard to manage. Constant state of stress of trying to figure out, well, wait, who am I supposed to be here? Here's what I'm going to do is I'm going to step back, wait for you to tell me who I'm supposed to be, and then I'll step into that role. Because that's what I would do. You know the cool thing about it today? Is there's just one me. It's so much easier. I'm Brandon pretty much all the time. There's times where I'm a little more polite or a little more proper. I'm still Brandon. And you know what's really cool is I've done enough inventory and I've gone through this process enough. The thing that I know is that there's a certain amount of people in this room can't stand me. Absolutely can't stand me. And there's a bunch of dudes that can completely relate to me and, you know, maybe would like to have another conversation. And then there's this even larger group of people that they really don't give a fuck about me at all. And you know what? That's fine. Because I'm finally at a place in my life where that is acceptable to me. Because one of our mentors, Don Pritz, said at one time that if everybody likes you, you're a phony anyways. So then we have this page 76, which has two paragraphs that cover two steps. I mean, like, up to page 75, we've covered the first five steps, right? In a shit ton of pages. And then we cover two steps and two paragraphs, and one of them's really just a prayer. It's the strangest thing. So, on the top of page 76, it ties back to the fifth step, the returning home. And it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction those questions of, is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer those questions to our satisfaction, then we look at step six. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. And then we have this one question that has two questions in it, but only one question mark. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all these things we have admitted are objectionable? The second question first. Is all those things that you wrote in the fourth step and that you shared in the fifth step and that if you had a competent sponsor they kept track of for you and they gave you this nice little list. If I'm your sponsor, I give you a list, I read it to you, and I give you a little chuckle. And sometimes I make you sit in it a little bit. Like you just filthed all over yourself. I pointed it out to you, and now you got to sit in it for a little bit, right? The bed's a mess from all the stuff you were doing for all your prior life, and now you get to roll around in it and enjoy it. Ick. Right? Did this to a guy one time. We finished up his inventory before a meeting started. I read him the sheet. I put it in front of him. We had about 30 minutes before the meeting started. I said, I just want you to read that list for a little while. I'll come back. Showed up 15, 20 minutes later. The guy that was sitting in the chair when I left was not the guy that I returned to see. Something had changed. And he slid the sheet back across to me and he said, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be that guy anymore. And he's a different guy now. He had never known what he was doing and how he was living life. So, what we get to ask ourselves is all this stuff that we just revealed to ourselves and to God and to others, which most people probably already saw already, is it objectionable? And you know what? If it's not, keep rocking it. If it's working for you, rock on, dude. At some point in time, it's probably going to become objectionable to you. That might show up in the ninth step, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But if I think they're actually objectionable, am I ready to let God remove them? Because there's certain things, you know, like justifiable anger, right? I want to hang on to some of that. Helps protect me, right? No, it doesn't. But I think it does. Right? This desire to be right all the time, that one's got claw marks on it as it's being dragged away from me, right? I remember in the situation that I'm currently in, I called Tarek and I read him what the Georgia statute said in terms of what's going on here and what happens to the guy. And Tarek kind of chuckled and goes, "Wow, I bet that part of you that likes to be right really feels good right now, doesn't it?" And what I said out loud was, "You're right." What I said in my head was, "Go fuck yourself." Right? So, who thinks that actually your defects will actually get removed from you? Just okay. Bad news. They don't. What happens is you become aware of them. Okay? So, one of Brandon's defects that showed up in his first inventory and probably has shown up in any piece of inventory that he's written ever since is that Brandon likes to be the center of attention and for people to notice him. Okay? In a lot of settings, that defect is a defect. Because it causes me to try to dominate situations that don't need me to dominate them. It causes me to rub people the wrong way because I want my point to be heard. But in a setting such as, let's say, doing a workshop in front of 54 guys that may or may not want to listen to them, it's effective. So what happens is that God finds these defects that you have, or these traits, and finds a way to make them useful to the rest of the world. There have been a number of times where my wife has said to me that I'm not emotional enough. Okay? Because she wants me to be more upset about certain things. Well, guess what? When we're in the middle of a shitstorm, she likes the fact that I'm not emotional about things. Right? Same exact trait. I got some physical traits that are that way too. As if any of you saw up on the screen before we started, when this is one of those stories that I think is true, but I've been telling it for so long that I've adopted it as true, and I'm not sure that it's entirely true. But I think that I started shaving every day in eighth grade. I'm pretty certain about it. But when I was talking about it the other night, I'm like, was I really though? And I don't know, because I've told myself that story for so long that I'm unsure that I really had to shave every day starting in eighth grade. I think it's true. But let's just assume it's true. So for the majority of my life, that's been a pain in the ass having to shave every day. Right? But when you want to grow a coronavirus quarantine beard, it's fucking awesome. Because that thing looked like a lion when I was done with it, right? Same trait. Okay? I also have this trait where my body, when I start exercising, processes the fats and the carbohydrates in a way that I gain mass really fast and get really pumped up, really big. No drugs, nothing like that. I get big. Okay? The same exact trait, when I don't work out and exercise and I eat the way that I eat, I gain weight really quickly. Same trait. I got a buddy I used to work out with all the time. He was a freaking rail. Dude could lift, other than legs and backs, he could lift every bit I could lift. And he stayed skinny as hell. You know what? Dude can go eat like 3 pizzas and he doesn't gain a pound. He's got a different trait. But it's the same. But it operates in him the same way. So what happens is that as we get this awareness around these traits, we stop using them to harm people and we start using them for good. And what happens is if we've done an inventory properly, when these things start to show up and the dialogue starts in the head of, oh, here's that person that thinks he's pretty important and everybody needs to listen to him. Right? My awareness of that becomes greater. Doesn't mean it's gone. It's just my awareness is greater and my ability to affect other people is minimized by it. So, in the sixth step, can he now take them all, every one of them? If we still cling to something that we will not let go of, we ask God to help us be willing. Okay? I had a... First time I went through the steps, I had this experience where my sponsor suggested that I sit with my list and ponder it and wait for something significant to show up in my life. This time he said, you'll know it when it shows up, it'll be profound. And so I had this experience one morning. I was bit by the meditation bug early in sobriety, and by the time I was at step six, it was like a regular thing, 20 minutes every morning, solid, right? And so I'm sitting there at step six, and I wanted to bring into my meditation the mother of my children, really focus on her and my relationship with her and sending her positive energy and all this stuff that you can actually do in meditation. And I that was the intent. So I'm sitting there on the couch, that was my intent, and I brought her right out here in front of my mind, and she was the focus. And I had this other thought, my thoughts come in from over here, I had this other thought that was smashing in, and I kept pushing it away and came smashing in and kept pushing it away. And then I had this experience where I finally stopped resisting the thought that was coming in, and I let it come and take that focus point in front of me. And what happened was this really magical thing where all those defects that had showed up in my fifth step and that my sponsor had written out, they were like little stars out here, and then there was this thought that came in the middle and it connected everything, and it I had this incredibly profound experience with God and myself, and how this one little experience as a child connected all this shit, this way that I showed up, and I had one of those lovely, wonderful cries that was just powerful, and I completely missed it. And I was talking to my sponsor about it that night, and he's like, so. Did you have that little six step experience we were talking about? I was like, no, I can't wait for it to show up. And he goes, tell me that story again. So I told him the story again. He's like, you think that might have been it? And I was like, oh. And he goes, go say the prayer. And what he was talking about is go and say the seventh step prayer. So real quick, humor me and go back to page 63. Okay, that's where we got the third step prayer, right? At the third step prayer, the last sentence of the third step prayer says, take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. You know something that's missing on that prayer? All right, turn to page 76. My Creator, I am now willing that you have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you remove from me every single defect of character that stands in my way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Is it possible that everything that we're doing from step three all the way to step seven is a continuous prayer? God, reveal me to me. Show me how I've been wrecking the lives of myself and everybody around me. Help me see it. And in the seventh step prayer, we close it out because I finally see it. Right? Somebody once said that the seventh step prayer is just the third step prayer with some teeth in it. God, take all of me, every bit of it, the good, the bad. I see it now. Remove from me every single thing that stands in my way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Again, it's not about me. Take away whatever you need to take away to make me useful. And give me the strength to do that. Guys, this is all about being useful and not feeling worthless. This process takes you through that. This process dissects that. This process gets you to see things. When I read you that piece of inventory, it got me to see how this is just a person that's struggling in life, but probably just wants to be loved, just wants to be treated well, just wants to not be lonely, just wants to be understood. And I see it now. And compassion opens. And forgiveness starts. And then these people that I felt justified in hating for what they had done to me, I don't hate them as much. If the inventory process works properly, I should be running to make my amends, because it's clear that I'm fucking up the world and I don't want to do it anymore. And then this magical thing happens where you just become pretty cool with the world.
There is a distinction between the terms remission and recovery. The former term, remission, is used in medicine and clinical research to depict the reduction of this phenomenon of addiction. In short, it says the patient once met but no longer meets the diagnostic criteria for substance use disorder. Remission is further specified by duration of symptom suppression. Remission does not necessarily mean that alcohol or other drug use has ceased and that all related problems have disappeared, only that any remaining use or problems are now below the threshold of diagnosis. Remission eliminates or reduces problems to subclinical levels, but may leave the remitted patient with an overwhelming sense of emptiness and disconnection. In contrast, the term recovery, used more frequently by those with lived experience of having survived addiction or alcoholism, is often used to suggest a process of change far beyond the removal of alcohol and other drugs from an otherwise unchanged life. It depicts the process of moving through and beyond remission to refill oneself, develop depth of character, and propel one towards relationships and contributions that reach beyond the self. In some recovery circles, remission without recovery is even cascaded as a shallow level of achievement. In such circles, remission is viewed as the temporary suppression of symptoms, where recovery is viewed as the process through which the surviving person is transformed. Remission can be an act of self-assertion, but recovery, this larger achievement of global health and functioning, often comes through an embrace of one's limitations, character defects, and transcendence of self. It involves the acceptance of one's brokenness, the practice of restraint and moderation in our thoughts, feelings, and emotions, and finding a purpose for one's survival. Awareness of imperfection and limitation allows us, through becoming strong in the weak places, to use adversities of character to build depth of character. Such depth is about far more than character reconstruction as a monument to self-fulfillment. It is about character in service to the larger needs of the world, to your local recovery community. To achieve this shift, the author suggests the need for a redemptive assistance, resources beyond the self. The courage to face one's empty self and the humility to reach out to others and to God are the first steps in seeing ourselves not as the center of the universe, and instead discovering how our small story fits into a much larger picture. To recognize our brokenness, our character defects, our limitations, and to heal in this way turns adversity and suffering into a transcendent purpose or sacred calling. Finding our place within the arch of history and committing ourselves to tasks that cannot be completed in a single lifetime. Such a process requires something quite different than getting into ourselves through therapies rife with intrapersonal self-exploration and whose aims are to increase self-knowledge, self-esteem, and self-expression. It may instead require two different processes: cultivating self-skepticism, humility, and tolerance, and getting out of ourselves, seeking meaningful relationships, resources, spiritual practices, and service activities beyond the self. The former strategy requires recognizing our flawed nature and quieting the roar of our own ego to the extent that we can actually listen to and experience other people. What at its best the author calls a ministry of presence. The latter strategy involves transforming recovery into a heroic journey that serves a larger purpose, while maintaining distrust of self and avoiding turning even the most righteous cause into a vehicle of self-importance. Extreme narcissism, self-will run riot in the language of Alcoholics Anonymous, is the essence of addiction, regardless of whether one sees this trait as a cause or consequence of addiction, regardless of whether that entrapment in self is manifested in grandiosity and acts of exploitation or in self-hatred and self-harm. It is paradoxical entrapment that combines self-absorption and self-inflation on the one hand with self-hatred and deteriorating self-care on the other. Escaping the Janus faces of addiction may require the shift from getting deeper into oneself to finally getting out of oneself. The journey from the abyss to the world is what builds character. The journey is the essence of recovery and what distinguishes recovery from remission. We are learning a lot about the prevalence and pathways of remission through advances in addiction research. The processes of recovery have yet to fully arrive as a subject of scientific investigation. Many of our addiction treatments, including an expanding menu of medications, can facilitate remission. Few of those treatments offer hope for the long-term process of character reconstruction to achieve recovery. Men and women seeking the latter must look to other contexts for such support. Spiritual path. So, one of the things I believe today is that the spiritual experience and the refinement of my character go hand in hand. And the only way I can really refine my character is by disclosing my limitations on a regular basis to those around me. You know, I'm involved in a men's group that's been meeting on Sunday for almost seven and a half years now. I rarely miss this meeting. And that meeting is completely based on this concept of character refinement. And I can report to you the same defects I had on November 5th, 2007, I still have today. But as a friend of mine says, when I came in on November 5th, 2007, there were roaring lions that would just rawr, all the time. They were just destroying and wreaking havoc. Today, there are these two little kittens right here, and they just purr. That's all they do. They've morphed. They've morphed into something else. And so examples, Brandon and I love examples, so, right? What are some of these defects that were with me back then that are still sort of with me? And he gave you two amazing examples of blameworthy, how traits can be blameworthy and praiseworthy at the same time. My need to be validated by others. That's a specific limitation that I had. But to a degree, it's still here today. I'm aware of it. I'm aware of it, and it does not dominate my life. But I still have it. I'd be sitting up here and lying to you if I said it was eradicated. But it's not like it was 12 and a half years ago. The belief that I have to be respected to live. I can probably change that today to the belief that I have to be respected. I don't need respect to live anymore, but I damn sure like being respected these days. Still there. My need to be important. It's still there. It allows me to sit up here, though. That feeds into my ability to sit in front of a crowd and share my message. to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous and do the best I can to teach individuals the application of the 12 steps and give you an adequate presentation of how that works. And what's driving that behind it? The presence, the ego. The ego can be put to good work. The ego is not the ego is not evil. As long as we attempt to live a way in which we try to put the ego in its right proximity, which is back here, and not out front running the show and dominating everything. Right? I'm always right. So now, back then it was I'm always right. Now I'm just right most of the time. Right? No, but
I once thought I was wrong, but I was just mistaken.
My time is more important than your time. I still struggle with that one. All right. Whereas back then, I would have created an altercation around someone's disrespect of my time. Where now I can take a deep breath, just like that, and be like, okay, let me just go on with my day. I like to feel good. I mean, back then I used to put mind-altering substances in my body because I liked to feel good, and I liked to get to a place where I didn't feel anything at all. And today, what happens? Netflix has taken the place from time to time. Amazon Prime, Hulu, food, shopping. These are all things I've used to feel good. The root of the defect is still there. The way the branch looks has changed. Right? Bill Wilson talks about defects of character in his story unlike anywhere else in the book. My new found friend came to take them away, root and branch. Right? The thing is, he takes away some things immediately. I don't steal anymore. Eradicated immediately. Right? I rarely assassinate anyone's character. It's rare that I'm going to assassinate someone's character.
Here's one that's kind of funny for me is that I used to never tell the truth entirely. I mean, it was kind of like I'd give you like 2/3 of the story, leave out the third that was maybe important that would indict me, right? Well, that's pretty much gone. But what's happened is this telling the truth thing has replaced it, and I have to be really careful with it sometimes because I absolutely tell the truth. And I was told by my wife one time, she goes, I'm okay with not knowing that 2% of stuff, you know, like when I show up from having lunch and I tell her that the waitress was hitting on me. That's complete honesty and disclosure, and it was necessary for me to do that for a period of time because I wanted to make sure that she knew she could trust me by not responding to the fact that the waitress was hitting on me. The way that it was received was that I was kind of flaunting it, that, hey, you know, another woman finds me kind of sexy, right? And she didn't want that. And so it's interesting how your defects can kind of shift and change into something new that's you're trying to overcompensate for the thing that you used to do, and you created a new defect as a result of it. It's fascinating, really.
So he just made a very important point that all of us are going to struggle with. And I think discovering our limitations creates a friction in our lives, which polishes us, which refines our character. You've got to have the friction there. And so I think I was guilty of this for some time, that I just really thought that, you know, that God was going to remove all my defects. And that just hasn't been the case. And Bill Wilson, you know, he wrote the big book between 38 and 39. I used to think it was 37, but I've been reading that new book that came out about the writing of the big book, and clearly the book, they didn't even start writing it till like 1938. And It was finished in around April or May of 39, and then in 1950, I think, is when the 12 and 12 came out. And there's some really, I mean, I love the 12 and 12. I rarely talk about it in this setting, but there is something I want to read out of it because I think it applies. Since most of us are born with an abundance of natural desires, it isn't strange that we often let those far exceed their intended purpose. When they drive us blindly or we willfully demand that they supply us with more satisfactions or pleasures than are possible or due us, that is the point at which we depart from the degree of perfection that God wishes for us here on earth. That is the measure of our character defects, or if you wish, our sins. If we ask, God will certainly forgive our derelictions, but in no case does he render us white as snow and keep us that way without our cooperation. That is something we are supposed to be willing to work towards ourselves. He asks only that we try as best we know how to make progress in the building of character. So step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, is AA's way of stating that the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning on this lifetime job. This does not mean that we expect all our character defects to be lifted out of us as the drive to drink or use was. A few of them maybe, but with most of them we shall have to be content with patient improvement. The key words, entirely ready, underline the fact that we want to aim at the very best we know or can learn. This is the essence of character refinement here. So the sixth step is really about willingness and being ready. The seventh step is about, it's about going to God with all the egg on my face and acknowledging in a humble manner, I am broken. I cannot fix myself. I cannot remedy this situation. Will you please take care of me? Change me the way you want to change me, and I'll be okay with whatever happens. That's what the seventh step's about for me. Right? Because when I go in there with terms and conditions, I specifically want this, I'm going to work on this. I'm going to say this prayer every single day until this character defect is removed. Well, I mean, how's that working for you if you've tried it? Let me know. That's, to me, it's about falling in love with the way I was created, with all my brokenness. And I know it's a term that we use a lot in the therapeutic community of self-love, but the more we fall in love with ourselves, and not in the narcissistic way, in a way of being okay with how we exist, right? You will spend more time being present to now if you're okay with how you exist. But if you're not okay with how you exist, and I'm not saying go out there and create a bunch of harm, there is honest attempt to resist at all times the things that we know are going to cause pain to others or pain to us. But there's this honest desire to be okay with it, because when we're okay with it, we don't judge ourselves. Because what happens when we judge ourselves is we have this set of a chosen ideal we want to live by, right? It's always lofty and always up here. Every single one of us shows up down here. And we spend the entire lifetime trying to close this gap. And guess what we end up missing? Our lives. Straight up. You won't be present. You're constantly trying to get to someplace. And so for me, it's become about being okay with how I've been made. Right, with this honest desire to want to open myself up for the change. And where I get confused is I think I'm somehow involved in the timing of the change. And the change has its own volition. Right? I mean, I thought for years I was involved in the timing of like picking up those white chips. Right? I'd try another sober living, try another halfway house, try another IOP, try another treatment center. But the thing was, until God gave me the miracle, I had nothing to really do except really waste my family's money. And I know we don't live in the world where I can say, hey man, just go out there, hit it really hard until God surrenders you. I can't do that. But at the same time, it's sort of what's happening, to be honest.
Burn it down.
Yeah, burn it down. Except they figure it out, they can make billions of dollars if they don't let you burn it down. I had to sneak that one in. You got anything? All right, folks, let's come back after dinner. 6 o'clock.